You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
We've got Holly Fulbrook in the studio and we're going to be having a chat to her about Some Were Meant for Sea. Wonderful celebration of 10 years of that record. So let's have a listen to Bird in the Time to get us in the mood. That is Bird in the Time by Tiny Ruins, and we have got Holly Fulbrook in the studio. Kia ora, Holly, how are you?
Morena, I'm very well, thanks. Good to be here.
It's very lovely to have you here, celebrating 10 years of that record, Some Were Meant for Sea. We were just talking off here about how 10 years is actually a very long time. A lot happens. How do you feel listening back to some of these recordings?
Well, I actually had just forgotten that they had violin and that kind of little ding bell.
Beautiful
meditation bells or whatever those things are. I remember recording that now, but I had forgotten that was on the recording. So
lots of relearning to do before you head off on tour, I guess.
Yeah. It's I was saying to a friend, like, I haven't listened to those recordings in several years and so I'm gonna refresh myself before heading out and playing the songs, because I know that people want to hear you know, the way that they remember them being played. But I feel like over time my voice has changed slightly and, you know, your way of playing changes and so it'll probably be a mix. It'll be an amalgamation of, like, old and new.
I think that's also something people, you know, enjoy as well, especially people who've been listening to your music for 10 years. They'll have followed you on that journey as well, and they'll be loving the new stuff as much as the old. Do you feel, I mean, when you think back on where you were and how you were writing 10 years ago, do you sort of, I mean, of course you've grown up, of course you've changed, but do you feel like a lot of things about how you fundamentally write have changed?
I think with that album, I was writing in a really unselfconscious way, in that I'd never really imagined those songs would be heard outside of my own bedroom. So that song was probably written about 13 years ago, and it was written for a play, actually, a Victoria University play that I was kind of involved in a very minor way, and. Yeah, I wrote that song kind of inspired by the play, and also I did find a fantail, sadly, in the herb garden of my flat. That song, I recorded it on like a little 4-track tape machine, and it played during the interval of this play.
Oh, nice.
So I just think about that time and how kind of I was just getting into like recording my songs myself on this tape machine and kind of... starting to feel like I was finding my voice as an artist, but still very much not thinking about doing gigs or like playing those songs to anybody other than my flatmates. And so I guess once you start putting your music out there and being more like in the public, it does somehow change your writing process, or you become like... it's more self-conscious without really realizing it. So I do think of that time as like this really beautiful kind of innocence of not really knowing what I was in for.
I think that's a pretty special thing to have had the sort of space, I guess, to be able to look back on that now and see it as a really particular time. It must be interesting to try and bring your, you know, bandmates into that headspace with you, because that sounds like it was a very sort of intimate and personal time for writing. Now you have all these other people that are, you know, great friends and very you know, successful collaborators working with you often when you're creating an album. Do you sort of feel like bringing people back into that headspace of where you were 10 years ago, does that feel a bit vulnerable sometimes, or do you feel sort of like that's another person you're looking at?
No, it still feels just as scary and vulnerable sharing a new song with my band, and we've just been finishing our fourth record together, and
it's exciting.
I would say without a doubt that playing them those songs for the first time, I was definitely like shaking in my boots, even though I know that they're like the most wonderful, you know, first listeners. They're very encouraging and, you know, I trust them a lot, but it was definitely, it's always scary. But it's weird, like as soon as that first play is over and you've done it to somebody, it's like it does lift away the fear of it, and from then onwards it's like, it's kind of away from you. So the first time it's like it's so personal and it feels so close to your heart, and then after that first play to somebody else, it's like, okay, I can do it to other people now.
That's such an interesting, I think a lot of people probably feel that when they're doing any kind of creative outlet, you know, having that first time someone else sees it, that's like standing right at the precipice. And then after that, it's sort of smooth sailing in many ways. One thing I think about when I listen to Some Women Meant for Sea is it's a very Wellington album. A lot of it is so literally located in Wellington, like the Adelphi Apartments and things like that. But, you know, there's also just a sort of sense of that Wellington literary world very much embedded in that record. Do you think of it as a Wellington record when you listen to it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I moved to Wellington from my home in Auckland. I grew up in West Auckland and then moved to Wellington for uni and lived there for 5 years, and I really was like very formative years, you know, from sort of 19 to 24, and pretty much all the songs on that record were written in this little shack that I lived in, this flat of about 8 people, but my room was this kind of shack at the back of the house.
Nice. That also sounds very Wellington, to be honest.
Yeah, it definitely would have won the award of the most mould, I think, that they just had. There was horrendous mould in the main house. And this shack had those kind of slat windows, you know, that don't quite close.
Oh, yes.
And I used to pin up bits of material on them. And so in the winter, they would just be flapping.
Oh, my God.
In and out. But it was kind of amazing because I had my own sink in this room. And so I could have like a kettle.
Nice.
And there was a little veranda. So it was a very romantic time. And I'm very like, I have a lot of affection for the for the past me from that time, because I feel like it was quite hard, and I was struggling quite a lot with the university workload and working hospo jobs, and then songwriting kind of was a bit of an escape.
Yeah.
It's very Wellington.
But it does, I guess, translate a lot across that time and that space as well, because, I mean, I've never lived in Wellington, but I feel very like a lot of those songs, there's just little moments in them where you're like, oh, yes, that is exactly, even though I haven't literally lived that thing, that feels exactly like something, an echo of in your own life or something. And that, I think, is a lovely thing about your writing, is that you're always very good at tapping into these little moments and these little feelings that are quite universal in through their specificness, you know, their specificity. Do you listen to older stuff and then come to your newer stuff and see the same ideas coming through, or do you feel like the stuff you write about has changed a lot since that time?
They're still, I think there's always been a personal connection to every song, like something that, even if it feels like it's about other characters or it's a little bit removed, it's usually got some link to an experience that I've had, or, you know, it's like a personal kind of coded message to somebody, or I don't know.
A musical subtweet.
Yeah, exactly. I think the observational, what you just picked up on, is a kind of like observing things that, yeah, observing things that I feel like I see and that other people might also connect to. I think often you don't feel like you connect to anybody else, and then sometimes I feel like songwriting is my way of like finding the the things that maybe other people also feel. So I think it's a similar thing, but over the years I've possibly even gotten a bit more personal in my songs. I think Some Were Meant for Sea was a real like little stories, kind of little vignettes, and about other characters,
yeah.
And that they had a meaning to my own life, but they were a little bit escapist and a little bit like, this is an imaginary world I'm going to.
Yeah. No, yeah. I think that's a really lovely thing about hearing what you make now and what you made then, and seeing those parallels. But as you say, a big change now in the sound and also the content. This is getting a reissue on vinyl, which is awesome, really great for people who maybe missed out on putting it in their collections first time round. We're going to be having the lovely Some Were Meant for Sea pressed on vinyl.
Yeah.
And you're taking it out on tour as well next month. And that show in Tamaki Makaurau will be at Whammy Bar on the 29th of July. You're also playing in Wellington, and you're playing in Dunedin and Christchurch too. So anyone who happens to be listening from there can also head along. And I'm exciting to hear about new music on the way. It's very cool.
Yeah, that is really exciting. I'm looking forward to sharing some of that soon. We're kind of in the final mixing stage, so
nice.
We'll
watch that space and enjoy the old classics in the meantime. Thank you so much, Holly Fulbrook, for coming in and speaking with us this morning. I think we should listen to the Adelphi Apartments now. This is from Some Were Meant for Sea, celebrating 10 years of that record. Thank you for coming in this morning.
It's a pleasure. Thanks so much for having me. Thank you.
Susie left in the Adelphi Apartments down by Carrigafoyle. At night she read Cannery Row before saying goodnight to the highway below. And all the tomcats knew her over on the Allenby step. Sundays she'd burn a candle for all the tears she hadn't wept, all the ends she hadn't met. Electric the ground her, she'd put a record on something warm like Olga Guillo, swaying her hips to a far off drum, where she lived in the Adelphi Apartments down by Carrigafoyle. At night she read Cannery saying goodnight to the highway below. Maurice next door coughing up the things he tried to say, didn't want to seem like dreaded the day. He'd put his ear to the wall to hear the fall of silence. Rosie'd gone, moved on away from where she lived in the Adelphi Apartments down by Carrigafoyle, where at night she read Cannery Row before saying goodnight to the highway below.
A 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.